we shall overcome.
You're hearing audio recorded by WYSO News in September of 1963. It's Walter Anderson, Antioch College's first black faculty member, leading hundreds of villagers who'd marched through Yellow Springs to mourn four little girls killed in a Birmingham church bombing and to strengthen their resolve to integrate a downtown barbershop. In the weeks after, protests escalated in front of Lou Gegner's shop, the last holdout in a decades-long effort to end racial discrimination in the village. WYSO covered the demonstrations as they intensified.
All five demonstrators kept picketing, so Sheriff Bradley read the injunction.
If you would cut the pickets to four, there will not be any arrests made. However, if this is not done, I have no other alternative.
The local civil rights demonstrators sang We Shall Overcome, the battle hymn of the integration movement. The National Association for the Advancement of White People countered with God Bless America. When no one dropped out of the picket line, all five demonstrators were arrested. They were loaded into a Yellow Springs police car for the trip to the Greene County Jail in Xenia.
For months, my own mother had been one of the picketers in front of the barbershop that continued to refuse haircuts to black men despite a court order. But on March 14, 1964, that's 50 years ago today, something happened that I will never forget. That day, Antioch students and students from nearby Central State and Wilberforce colleges, along with hundreds of villagers, gathered to demonstrate in front of the shop. My parents brought me and my younger sisters and brother downtown, too. I was 8 years old, and I remember locking arms, swaying, and singing along with the protesters. We don't have archival tape of that day, but our oral history project has recorded eyewitness accounts. Sterling Wright was a young teenager, and Bomani Moyenda was 10 years old. Here are Sterling, then Bomani, with their memories of that day.
So I remember getting up in the morning and my parents telling me, don't go downtown because there's going to be problems. But I was 13 at the time, and myself and a lot of our friends were going to go down there anyway out of curiosity.
But I remember my mother taking my sister and I down there that day and standing and watching, and the students linked arm in arm, you know, across the street. I wasn't exactly sure what was going on, but I knew it was about this white man who refused to serve black customers.
So as we approached the town, me and a few of my friends, we started talking, and we were very well aware of what was going on in the United States. The demonstrations, the freedom riders, the lynchings, we were very, very well aware, and were very shocked that that could happen here in our hometown.
To see that many people occupying downtown and tension that was in the air, you know, to sense that and to hear the singing and the shouts of the protesters, you know, it was really intense.
It was so intense that officers in riot gear used nightsticks and fire hoses to break up the demonstrators. Those of us watching from the sidewalk scattered and ran, blinded and choking as tear gas billowed through the crowd. Abandoning nonviolence, some protesters actively resisted arrest, and over 100 people were hauled off to jail. The years of insistent but peaceful protests ended up in a riot that was carried on the national evening news. The barber closed the shop that day, never to reopen, never to integrate. The movement marched on. That summer, volunteers from all over the country headed for Mississippi to open freedom schools and register black voters. And Congress passed the Civil Rights Act on July 2nd of 64, making integration the law of the land. To hear more historic audio and to see photographs from this critical moment in our history, visit WYSO.org. For Rediscovered Radio at WYSO, I'm Jocelyn Robinson.